Earlier this month, President Obama announced a number of plans to make the reintegration process less impossible for Americans who have served time behind bars. Remarkable work on this issue at the state level has been going on for years, specifically in Connecticut, where the Malta Criminal Justice Initiative has taken the lead for concrete reform. Joining me now is John Santa, chair of the Malta Criminal Justice Initiative. John, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you very much, Bob. Nice to be with you.
Let's start with a little background on the Order of Malta's involvement in prison issues. I know you can fill us in.
Certainly will. Thanks very much. The Order of Malta, first of all, is the third oldest order in the Roman Church. It started in the late 11th century. We are men and women who do work on behalf of the sick and the poor all around the world. 13,000 of us around the world, around 3,000 in America. Back in the late 1990s, I had a situation where I went to visit a friend who went to prison, and it so happened that I was in formation for the order at that point in time. And when I went into prison, with the words, serving the sick and the poor, echoing in my mind, I looked around the prison population, and my goodness, our proudest product in prison is poverty. We make poverty there. Mm. If people aren't poor coming in, they'll be poor coming out. So therefore, there were poor people aplenty, and additionally, 9 in 10 people that find their way into our criminal justice system are mentally ill and or addicted. So it was a mission that fit very well for the Order of Malta.
Is there a religious component to your approach to criminal justice?
Well, certainly there is a religious component in that we are informed and inspired by our Christian faith, our Catholic religion. Mm-hmm. But I would say to you that while we do some sacramental preparation work in prison and the like, we are more here to serve the people who are incarcerated of any faith tradition. Mm-hmm. And we welcome people of any faith tradition to our mission because we do what we do because we are Christians and Catholics, not because they are Christians and Catholics. Mm. We're not strictly proselytizing.
I understand, and I'm glad. John, I think it would be really helpful for you to talk about the specific issues that face Americans after a sentence behind bars.
Yes, well, there's prison ministry work to be done behind bars and in correctional institutions. Much, much more of it is to be done in the free world because there are so many people coming out of prison every year. Mm-hmm. Now, their plight once out is daunting, at the very least. It's daunting. There was a report released by the American Bar Association mm-hmm. a couple of months back indicating that according to their research, there are 50,000 laws, rules, and regulations against people coming out of prison getting a job, living in this, certain accommodations, being able to vote, being able to get certain licenses. It's a myriad of things for people as they try to come out and they try to regain their life. And, you know, as if things weren't hard enough already, right now, in the Order of Malta here in Connecticut, we're about to begin a survey. We're going to do a top-flight survey of employer opinion on the hiring of formerly incarcerated people. We know that there is a bias against hiring them, but we want to find out what that bias is all about. We want to find the dimensions of that and see if we can somehow deal with that because I think that a lot of people have an attitude, a negative attitude towards formerly incarcerated people when they don't even think about it. Mm-hmm. They don't even realize that these are human beings. These are people. These are, if we Christians call them children of God, just like us. Mm-hmm. They're human beings. And granted, they failed in some way to society, but that doesn't mean they're not any good.
How did you address these challenges in Connecticut?
Well, you know, it's funny. Well, in our raging naivete, we first went to employers. And the employers that we found were community groups like Rotary, Kiwanis, and Lions Club, and churches and business groups. And we went out and we made over 45 presentations to groups like that across all across the state of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And we struck out. We got no jobs. Nobody stood up and said, let's hire somebody. This is a great idea. But what we found out was we plumbed the depths of the ignorance of the average walking around person as regards the criminal justice system in America. They had no idea. They had no idea that we incarcerated 25% of the world's prisoners with 5% of the world's population. They have no idea how out of step we were with 36 Western nations. Our incarceration rate is 9 times that of Germany's. And Germany's not the Wild West.
Mm.
They had no idea the outrageous cost that it was to incarcerate people, nor do they have any idea as to the overwhelming failure rate and the recidivism that 2 in 3 formerly incarcerated people were back in prison within 3 years.
Hmm.
Now, when they found that out, people were not happy. They were not pleased with that, and they shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't be, right?
Right.
I'm not. So what we did was we changed our focus to become advocates and to work on advocacy. And to that end, we wrote our book called The Justice Imperative, which is, best of our knowledge, a never-before-done book. It was a book on criminal justice reform in Connecticut, but it could well be adapted to Iowa or Georgia or Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, we used our book to go and speak to 3 specific audiences, and they were the faith communities, the academic communities, and the business communities of the state of Connecticut. And our idea was to bring this book to them, to educate and inform them, to help them to find their voice so that they would speak to legislators about making changes in criminal justice policy, practice, and budgeting that would make this a better situation, much better than it is. And we chose those 3 for 2 specific reasons. Number one, they are thought leaders. By their very nature, they are thought leaders to the general public. Secondly, all 3 of them are halfway home on this deal.
Hmm.
Business people know that the amount of money we're spending on incarceration and the failure rate thereof is very imprudent and very wasteful of tax dollars. Academic people, they're the people that study and do background information and find out why things are as they are and do research. Well, I mean, if you can add 2 and 2, you know this system is wrong.
Mm.
And finally, as regards faith people, well, as you may or may not realize, the system we have in America and the prisons we've built and the system we run here is built on the concept that people that go to prison are irredeemable. They're beyond redemption.
Hmm.
And I don't know about you, but we don't believe that. That is antithetical to everything we do as Christians and Catholics. We believe in redemption. Therefore, those faith communities, and I mentioned the Christian one, but my goodness, Muslim, Jew, Baha'i, everybody knows that people are redeemable for sure, for sure, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had some considerable success with that.
Well, John, you've got a grasp on how to address this locally. You've proven that where you live. When we think about it nationally, what is most needed to begin bringing concrete reforms at the national level?
I think that it is very important that we shift the paradigm of public opinion. Now, let's think about this. How did we get to where we are? We had a lot of civil unrest in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. You know, cities being burned down, the civil rights movement, anti-war protests, the murders of the 2 Kennedy brothers and King and Watergate. And, you know, there's a lot of lawlessness going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, therefore, the American public was very ready to receive a message of law and order, lock them up and throw away the key, we're going to make our streets safe for your women and children, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that came such things as the Rockefeller drug laws, and 3 strikes and you're out, and 10 times the penalty for crack cocaine is powdered cocaine, and all manner of draconian sanctions and measures that were going to make our streets safe. Who doesn't remember the famous Willie Horton incident with regard to Michael Dukakis when he was running against Bush for president? They made that a cause célèbre, that Dukakis was, quote, soft on crime, unquote. And that became the worst, worst thing any politician could be. Conversely, if you're tough on crime, that was very, very good. Well, understand that we Americans, we regular voting citizens, we regular people, we bought that hook, line, and sinker. And so consequently, between 1980 and 2000, our prison population quadrupled. Well, it might surprise you and your listeners to understand that in the decade of the 1990s, we were finishing, here in America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, we were finishing a new prison every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks. We built 240 new prisons in America in that one decade. That was the power of public opinion. That was the power of the political advancement of a concept. And so, to me, it makes a lot of sense that if that's how we got in here, that's how we ought to get out of here, too. And that, that it would be prudent of us to try to shape and change public opinion about this. And we're working on that. That's what our book, The Justice Imperative, is about. That's what other people are trying to do. And so, therefore, if Obama stands up on this, that's good. That's very good.
And, John, tell our listeners, before we get off, how they can keep up with your work.
Absolutely, absolutely. They're welcome to go to our website, MaltaJusticeInitiative.org. MaltaJusticeInitiative.org. There's some great resources there. The second thing they could do is they could visit the website of our book, and that's TheJusticeImperative.org. And then our book is available on Amazon.com in either hard copy or Kindle version.
John Santa is chair of the Malta Criminal Justice Initiative. After a lifetime in business, John has devoted himself to working to inform and educate the business, faith, and academic communities about the opportunities available in criminal justice legislative reform. John, thank you so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio. Keep us informed.
Thank you very much, Walton. I really appreciate him being with you, and God bless you and the work you're doing too, my friend.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to say a sincere thank you. We rely on listener support to keep this show on the air. As the end of the year gets closer, please consider a tax-deductible contribution to State of Belief and to Interfaith Alliance. You don't have any idea how much that will help. If you've heard something on this week's show that you think would be helpful to friends or acquaintances, please share it with them. It's very easy to do on Facebook, Twitter, and at stateofbelief.com. Stateofbelief.com is also where you'll find extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned in the show. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. You never know what's happening there. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see, Welton.